do the 3 acre, or do the other?
Is Brandon Cave here? You don't look like Mr. Cave.
No, I'm not. I'm standing in today.
Let us pray. Gracious and holy God, we do thank you for this day, Lord. Thank you for bringing us to this point in the day. And Father God, I pray your blessings upon this council, Lord, and pray that you would give them wisdom to make the decisions that need to be made this day. These and all things we pray in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
I got it.
Mr. Gwynn.
Here.
Mr. McLeod.
Here.
Ms. Heinbuckle.
Here.
Mr. Musley.
Here.
Mr. Rowland.
Here.
Ms. Rich.
Here. Next, we have awards and presentations. 2A is a proclamation, 101st anniversary of Girl Scouts of the USA, Elizabeth Guth and Girl Scout Daisy Troop, 541.
It's okay, we don't want to be up here either.
I have a proclamation to read to you. Won't you come up a little closer?
Yeah, let me get out your way.
Can you get through?
We don't bite.
Where's yours? You bought some of just two boxes of shortbread.
The word is like my child.
Box of shortbread.
Jody. Okay. This is a proclamation for the Girl Scouts. Whereas March 12th, 2013 marks the 101st anniversary of Girl Scouts of the USA, which began in 1912 when Savannah, Georgia native Juliet Daisy Gordon Lowe gathered 18 girls to provide them with the opportunity to develop physically, mentally, and spiritually. And whereas the Girl Scout Gold Award, the highest honor in Girl Scouting, requires girls to make a measurable and sustainable difference in their communities by assessing a trend and designing a solution, finding the resources and support to make it happen, completing the project, and also inspiring others to sustain it. And whereas one program around science, technology, engineering, and math, which is called STEM, environmental stewardship, healthy living, financial literacy, and global citizenship help girls develop a solid foundation in leadership. And since its founding in 2000, the Girl Scout Research Energy Institute has become an international recognized center for original research. Research reviews and surveys that provide significant insight into the lives of girls. And whereas through the dedication, time, and talent of volunteers of different backgrounds, abilities, and areas of expertise, the Girl Scouts program is brought to nearly 21,000 girls in grades K-12 throughout West Central Florida. And whereas today, 59 million Americans are Girl Scout or alumni, 3.2 million girls and adult volunteers are active members, and Girl Scouts is the largest member of the World Association of Girl Guides and Girl Scouts, a global involvement comprised of more than 10 million girls and adults in 145 countries worldwide. And why am I reading this?
I have no idea, but that's okay.
Kent Gwynn, who is him, by virtue of the authority vested in him as mayor of the city of Ocala, Florida, do hereby proclaim March 12, 2013, as the 101st anniversary of Girl Scouts of the USA. And I applaud Girl Scouts across the country, and especially our local Girl Scouts for their 101 years of leadership and expertise as the voice for girls. I want to present this.
You can call her a lot of things, just don't call her Kent.
Recognition of Hector Del Valle for his heroic attempts to assist someone in medical need.
How are you?
Okay, see. This is a recognition for Hector, and I'll read the description of what he did here. It says, on Saturday, March the 2nd, 2013, while on duty, Hector, help me pronounce your last name.
Del Valle.
Del Valle entered the E.D. Krosky Recreation Center at the MLK Recreation Complex, where a basketball tournament was taking place. Upon entering, he noticed a young lady, 14 years old, lying on the floor in distress. The young female had just finished playing basketball and had collapsed by the side doors. Hector confirmed that someone had called 911 and proceeded to physically check on the young lady. After reporting her symptoms to 911, Hector prepared to start CPR. At that point, EMS and fire appeared at the scene and took over and transported the young lady to ORMC. Hector reported all of this on his daily log in his usual very succinct detail, ending it with secured and locked gate. Just another day in the life of Hector Duvalli, Ocala Park Ranger. So congratulations.
Here, here.
If I can
just like to note the huge responsibility that we place on our park rangers. They work very independently. And as the mayor said, if you look at their logs, it's so interesting to read Hector's log that day, because he checked and locked gates, he checked security, he checked several parks, he saved a girl, and he checked and locked the door. And that's how so Hector, thank you very much for all that you do, not just this special occasion, but every day.
Thank you.
We're truly fortunate to have somebody of your character, so thank you very much.
No, thank you very much.
All right, we've got this little plaque, little Superman logo on there, and it says presented to Hector in appreciation for your outstanding heroic City of Ocala Recreation and Parks, March 2013.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right, thanks, Captain.
Hector, outstanding job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jennifer Blair here.
There she is.
Come on up. Good, you're up. Watch. Probably 100 people do this, or more. And we've got Ann Spang, our photographer. All right, this is for Jennifer Blair's 25-year anniversary. So it says, Jennifer Blair started her career with the City of Ocala on March 27, 1988, as a lead worker, clubhouse attendant under the direction of then golf director Joe Moses at Pine Oaks Golf Course. Jennifer advanced quickly, being promoted to a pro shop operations manager in May of 89, and then to golf department deputy director in 1994. In October 2000, when the golf department merged with the recreation and parks department, Jennifer became the city's special events manager, where she produced all the city-sponsored special events, such as Light Up Ocala, St. Patrick's Day on the Square, and Red, White, and Blues, to name a few. Jennifer was also responsible for helping to develop the city's special event permitting process and coordinating events support services for outside agencies. She served in this position until December 2008, when she was promoted to the Special Services Division Manager. Over the past 25 years, Jennifer has represented the city in a variety of capacities, but it's important to note that Jennifer didn't just make a mark on her coworkers or the city as an organization. She has made a mark on this community. She has truly been invested in making Ocala a great place to live, play, and prosper. At the end of this month, Jennifer will celebrate her retirement from the City of Ocala, and we want to take this time to not only reward her for 25 years of service, but to wish her the best as she moves into the next chapter of her life, the chapter where the good stuff happens. In addition to giving her a 25-year pin, we'd like to give her a copy of our volunteer services application.
Thank you.
This is your,
and I'd just like to say, Jennifer is truly a hard worker.
Absolutely.
1 year.
I feel like I'm about to be roasted.
At Light Up Ocala, she worked so hard that she had some serious injuries on her feet. And she never said a word to the city manager or anybody, because she should have been given time off from work and paying her doctor bills and everything, but she never said a word. But that's a true employee, a good employee, and we'll miss you.
Thank you.
And this is a clock that says presented to Jennifer Blair in recognition of 25 years of service to the City of Ocala, March 2013. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to say a few words.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I feel I've been extremely blessed to work for the City of Ocala. I've worked with a lot of dedicated coworkers. I've made a lot of good memories and a lot of great friends, and I thank a number of people for that. I thank God. I thank my past directors. I thank my director, Kathy Kreil. I thank my coworkers, both within my department and throughout the city. I thank City Council. I thank the public, and I thank my friends that have supported me throughout the years. I also want to thank my biggest and best fan. That's my daughter, Jessica, who has been there by my side through thick and thin. And I could not have done what I've done without the support of each and every one of you. I'm really going to miss this. It's been a great run. I've enjoyed it, and I'm ready for the next chapter of my life to begin. And my daughter told me probably about an hour ago that I'm going to be a grandma. I'm really ready to start this. But I want to thank everyone again and wish you the best. It's really been great, and just thanks. Aloha.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, enjoyed working with you.
Oh, I've enjoyed working with you.
Don't be a stranger.
I won't. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Congratulations on the grandkids.
Thank you. Number three, public comments.
Madam President, we had one item we wanted to kind of insert there, a PowerPoint.
I forgot.
You're okay.
We have a PowerPoint presentation at this time.
Mayor, go ahead.
Go ahead. Okay. As you know, we had the governor visit our fine city the other day on Friday, and as it turned out, I was going to get my afternoon caffeine fix down at Starbucks and happened to see about three cars from FDLE sitting in front. So I walked in there and said hi to them. And you know, the governor said, I said, well, you know, are you doing anything between now and the time we're going to meet, which was about 2:30 when I saw him. And he said, no. He said, we just got here really early. Is there some, he said, do you want to walk around downtown? Is there someone I should see or say hi to? And I said, well, as a matter of fact, there's a gentleman that has a birthday, Mr. Gause. Mm-hmm. So we walked in, Gause and Son, and wished Jerry a happy birthday. And then he asked me, he said, and then we went up to see Bryce Peak, and Albert was gone, and talked about some of the downtown stuff that they're doing. And he asked me where the newspaper was, and I said, well, there's one over on the Starbucks in the newspaper rack. I said, you want one? He said, no. He said, I mean, where's the newspaper, where they print it? And so we rode over there, and the governor walked all around and shook everybody's hand, introduced himself to everybody at the Star Banner, including Mr. Rogers and Tom McNiff, and so it was pretty neat to see him do that. And then we went out to the event. So you know, we arrived here. There were obviously a lot of folks out there, commissioners, a lot of staff, and we had to wait for the state representatives to get there before we got started. Matt was getting going and everything. Someone told me just, you know, let's wait till they get here so we don't have to do this twice. You can see Matt there in the background and some of our folks. And we did the presentation on the 49 project and just, you know, kind of described to him where things were going to be located showed where the FedEx site was going to be, site plans, et cetera. Here's Matt here with the map.
So it was real interesting. You know, staff did a great job, of course, getting everything out there, getting it located. Governor Scott there is just doing a little, you know, interview with Mr. Hires, Fred Hires from the Star Banner, and there's Commissioner Bryant. And then we got through. There's a lot of folks there. There's Council President Pro Tem McLeod there on the one end, and I'm got the other end, so with the county commission in the middle. How about that? So we said goodbye to everyone and went over to the former Taylor Bean and Whitaker building, now known as, I guess, the R.L. Roberts building. Had a nice visit with Mr. Roberts, talked about what their plans are, you know, for their building and what they're going to do in that building. So anyway, it was a good visit. You know, I got to talk to him, you know, while we were in the car about a number of things. And so hopefully we'll have an opportunity to get him down here again. But, you know, if his schedule permits, we'd like to have him, obviously, you know, an entire day. But, you know, we're happy to have him, whether it's an hour or, you know, all day. So we're very appreciative that he was able to make time to come down here. Councilman.
Yeah, I hope everyone understands how difficult it is to get on the governor's schedule. And, you know, the mayor's been trying for quite some time to do it, several times that he was actually on there and then the governor couldn't make it. But to actually get him here and get him out to some of our projects, get him to our downtown, and to have everyone together and, you know, have that opportunity. So kudos to the mayor for that. I would like to say there was one little stressful situation when we were out at 489. The television cameras came out, and the mayor almost got knocked down by the county commission trying to get in front of them. So, that being said, again, thank you, Mr. Mayor. We appreciate your hard work and efforts, and it's good for Ocala and Marion County.
Well, thanks. Yeah, one of the female county commissioners always likes a photo op, so. Don't want to get in the way of her having a photo op. Anyway, well, thank you, and thanks to staff for doing that. You guys did a great job preparing that. I know it was short notice, but, you know, like Council President Pro Tem McLeod said, it's all last-minute things. I mean, they could have called me 24 hours before and just said, you know, it's not going to work out. He's not going to be able to be here. So. I apologize to anyone for the late notice, but it was probably the last moment we got it confirmed. So thank you.
So, public comments, Kat Crowell.
Is she here? I don't see her here.
She's not here. So, are there any other public comments from anyone in the audience? Moving right along, we will go to public hearings. 4A is adopt ordinance 2013-24 for rezoning from 001 office to B1 neighborhood business, approximately 4.44 acres of property located at 4421 Southwest College Road, State Road 200. Case number ZON13-0001, OPZ on February 11th, 2013, approved it 6-0 vote. It was introduced by Council Member Daniel Owen on March 5th, 2013. Presentation by Mark Mundell.
Madam President, I move that ordinance 2013-24 be adopted as provided by the Charter of the City of Ocala, except that adoptions by sections on second reading be waived and based on staff's recommendation for case ZON13-0001 and other evidence presented to City Council.
Second.
An ordinance amending the zoning map of the City of Ocala, Florida, changing from 01 office to B1 neighborhood business for certain property located at 4421 Southwest College Road, Ocala, Florida. Case number ZON13-0001. Providing for severability, providing for the repeal of conflicting ordinances, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you, Council. In 2007, the Planning and Zoning Commission and City Council approved the rezoning of this property from O1 to B1 and a developer's agreement. The rezoning ordinance, however, and development agreement were not finalized because the proposed site plan was not approved by October 1st, 2008. The language in the rezoning ordinance required the site plan to be adopted before the rezoning was effective. The applicant has resubmitted the same zoning request and the developer's agreement, which is the next item on your agenda, both which were approved back in 07, but without the language requiring a site plan to be approved prior to the rezoning ordinance to become effective. Staff recommends approval.
Mr. Gray, is this yours?
Good afternoon. Steve Gray, 125 Northeast 1st Avenue, Suite 1. This is the second time around for this particular piece of property. It's across State Road 200 from the Heathrop project. And the primary thing I would note here is that there is a developer's agreement that provides considerable advantages, I think, to the adjoining property owners. The developer's agreement provides, and that's a Country Oaks subdivision, it provides an 8-foot wall and buffer, so it's a higher wall and a buffer. It has shared shielded lighting, has a pretty extensive schedule of prohibited uses, which was very important to the residents immediately adjacent to the property. It has a limitation on alcoholic beverage sales only to restaurants and snow nightclubs. It has a closing time for all commercial establishments of 10:30 p.m. on any day. It also provides, and we were working with the Country Oaks Property Owners Association, and everyone always tells me, and I always hear at hearings, that they don't have very much faith in governments imposing restrictions on development because governments then don't enforce it. And so we included in this agreement direct enforcement rights for either the Property Owners Association or the owner of any lot that was adjacent to the boundary of the commercial property. And that does give them something that they don't normally have. Most of the time, if the restrictions or the development limitations are in a zoning ordinance, the people have to come to the city, try to go through the code enforcement. Now, code enforcement works, but only to some degree. So this gives them direct enforcement rights. There is shared access here on State Road 200 with a new cell phone company, and part of the reactivation is that the property owner is in the process of finalizing a contract with a national company that would construct a facility fairly quickly on the property. So we're requesting approval without the site plan requirement in advance, because normally the site plan is a staff item after the zoning is approved. And this developer's agreement imposes a lot of restrictions on the site, so it's pretty much covered general protection, and then it's just a matter of detail on the staff. I can answer any questions if you have any questions.
Thank you. Anyone in the audience care to comment on this item? Call the roll, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Olin?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye. B is approve a developer's agreement for property approximately 4.44 acres located at 4421 Southwest College Road, State Road 200, case DMA 13-0006, OPZ on February 11th, 2013, approved 6-0 vote.
Thank you. This is the development agreement. It's the companion item to the rezoning case that you just considered. As Mr. Gray mentioned, it includes a number of provisions. The site plan, when submitted, must comply with the terms of the agreement. Exterior lighting shall be shielded. Requires a 15-foot buffer and 8-foot high wall adjacent to Country Oaks. There are some limitations on specific uses and does address potential future alcohol sales. Staff recommends approval.
So moved.
Second.
Y'all have any questions or comments? Anyone in the audience care to comment on this issue? You don't want to come back, Mr. Gray? Call the roll.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye. 4C is open a public hearing to consider approval of an amendment to the master development agreement to be entered into pursuant to sections 163.3220 through 163.3243, inclusive Florida statutes, between the City of Ocala, City, Ocala 489 LLC, a Florida Limited Liability Company, Ocala 489, and Marion County, Florida County, case DMA 130002. This is the second of two public hearings. The first public hearing was held on March 5th, 2013. Continued from February 19th, 2013.
Thank you. You should have at your desk a proposed revised amendment along with a clean version of that document. The revised amendment, or the redline version, compares the document to that which is included as part of your agenda packet this evening. What I'd like to do is actually invite Mr. Gray. He was able to present this amendment to the County Commission this morning, which was approved 5-0. I think you did a good job of outlining the revisions and changes, and so if it's okay with you, I'd like him to present that to you.
Okay. Good afternoon, Steve Gray, 125 Northeast First Avenue, Suite 1, Ocala. This is a first amendment to the master development agreement that was entered into in August of 2011. And it covers a number of items, and I'll try to sort of categorize them. A number of the items in this agreement are requirements under our Ocala 489's purchase and sale agreement with FedEx. FedEx analyzed the original master's development agreement, and then they had a much longer list of proposed changes to it. But some of them were required in order to conform the agreement to the actual FedEx project. For instance, in the original development agreement, there was a master plan that contemplated that 35th Avenue would swing over and run parallel to the edge of the interstate and then back over to 35th Street. FedEx wanted to be on the interstate. And so we completely moved the alignment of 35th Avenue to the new alignment, which basically is fairly straight north. Swings out a little bit, and that facilitates our ability to get FedEx's site, which is 150 acres, in the right location. There were a number of dates of completion of infrastructure that needed refinement. For instance, we had to redesign 35th Avenue, go through the permitting process again on that because the road was moved over. That triggered some changes in the county's design work on 35th Street. All of these things sort of cascade through the project. So a number of the changes in the agreement are driven by requirements that we obtain those changes to qualify or satisfy our FedEx agreement. Another major item in the agreement that involves FedEx is that originally FedEx, they looked at the agreement, they loved the agreement, and they said, well, we'll just become a party to your agreement. And neither the city or the county nor Ocala 489 really wanted to do that. FedEx is a major project, but there will be other projects in the future. And if you add more and more parties to this agreement, it's really unusual that they were asking for that. The negotiated compromise that we had worked with your staff and the county staff as we were negotiating our purchase agreement was that we would have a separate agreement between the city, county, Ocala 489, and FedEx. We, in order to not have to do this with every buyer, in the project, you'll see that we created a category called a qualified purchaser, which is basically a large tract of land, a large number of employees, or a large capital investment. In that agreement, the city and the county in Ocala 489 will reconfirm all of their pending obligations which need to be completed for FedEx to not only construct their project but to open it. So the need for these kind of agreements will go away once the roads and utilities are in. But right now, if you think about it, the city and the county both have road construction underway. City has utilities construction. We may have some additional design cost reimbursement obligations. And FedEx is planning to initiate construction soon after they close. It's a long project for site development and then for construction. But they are basically putting about $200 million in the project initially. So they're pretty reliant upon all the roads, all the utilities, and everything else being in place on time. Now, their rights under that agreement are a right to pursue specific performance to force any party defaulting. They do not have a damage right, because damages would be pretty astronomical. So that's how we work through that impasse in finalizing the purchase agreement. And we did it with communications with your staff and Mr. Gooding and the corresponding people for the county. There are some other provisions in here, one of which is this. We had requested that currently the agreement requires that we initiate construction of the rail spur. Now, I can tell you that we completed 2 weeks ago acquisition through condemnation of the missing piece of right-of-way needed for the rail spur. So the city and Ocala 489 now jointly control all of the rail right-of-way needed from third parties to build the rail spur from CSX to the project. But that obligation was really only to build to the project, and then we would extend to a user. FedEx, of course, is not a rail user, and so a large piece of the puzzle is out, and they're not a rail user. We requested that we not be required to construct what would be a very expensive rail spur crossing 27 until we have a user. Partial consideration for that, and to facilitate some of the things the city is thinking about, is that we have agreed, and this agreement obligates us to do this, that if the city develops a user, the city owns in various pieces properties between the CSX rail line and 27th Avenue. If the city develops a rail user, a true rail user, which would be either a transfer facility or an actual user, if the city develops a rail user on their property and we have not developed a rail user on our property yet, we are still obligated to construct enough of the rail line to run from CSX through the DeWeese property, which is the intervening piece that a third party family owned, through the DeWeese property and into your property to a point, an agreed upon point, where you would finish the construction to the actual facility. So what that does is it means that you're not waiting for us to get a user to have availability of the rail spur on your property if something develops for you on that particular piece. So it's a little bit of a trade-off. We're not going to immediately construct the rail spur, but we are still obligated to do it if we sell to a rail user. And if we get a rail user, that it works out financially, we would construct the rail spur. A final reason for the change is that there could be some question as to whether we would qualify for available state funds to assist in the construction cost of the rail spur if it's already a contractual obligation. Sort of the same scenario that y'all go through with the roads. There is available state funds right now for a rail spur, but rail users are not as common as people think, and so far we have not had anybody as a rail user here. So those are the general items that are covered. There's a number of fairly technical changes to the master development agreement. But finalizing the agreement then sets, moves us to a point where we now move into another phase of agreements that you'll be seeing in front of you very quickly, one after another, some parallel, that are almost all related to FedEx. There'll be a power line relocation agreement, which will come before you. You will not see a separate agreement, which is there is a gas line relocation agreement with Florida Gas Transmission Company, which is a pretty major piece of work for relocating a high-pressure natural gas line that runs under the site. And then there's various other agreements. This qualified purchaser agreement you will see very quickly. That will be the city, the county of California, and FedEx. And so we have a lot more work to do, but we are progressing. And of course, we have finalized the purchase agreement. The effective date of that agreement was March 1, but FedEx is very far along in the and where we are, and everything on their end seems to be on a timeline that corresponds to our purchase agreement, which has a closing date in the third quarter of this year. And as you know, that sort of an update, FedEx has filed with the city the site plan application. They have filed with the Water Management District the permit that will drive a lot of the timeline, which is their environmental resources permit, which includes a mass grading of the site. And that permit is sort of the critical permit in every timeline, from closing forward to opening. So we were before the county commission this morning. It was approved. We're hoping that you will approve this and we'll continue forward. I can answer any questions if you have any questions. Thank you.
Before somebody moves, we'd like for you to make a motion, if it's for approval, subject to approval by the city manager as well as legal review. There have been some last-minute changes. We want to make sure that what we have is the same version the county commission approved.
Okay.
And the version you have in front of you is what we think it is.
I move approval subject to the city manager and legal review.
Second. Anyone in the audience care to discuss this issue? Call the roll.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Rowland?
Aye.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye.
Ms. Rich? I'm sorry, before you go forward, I just wanted to share with council this drawing. This is just one of the pages of the site plan that was submitted by FedEx on March 1st. And just so you know, if you remember, per the incentive agreement, they're required to build a minimum of 383,161 square feet, valued at $122.9 million, create 165 jobs. This ultimate site plan that they've submitted contemplates more than just their initial construction, but this indicates 583,139 square feet for the main structure, plus there's five other outbuildings, so that's additional square footage. As you heard Steve Gray mention, approximately $200 million capital investment. This indicates 944 parking spaces. So
if I can get some context, this is I-75 right here. North, this is south. This is segments C and B, and US 27 is right here.
So it does seem to be making good progress.
Could you hold it up so the audience could see it?
Mr. Brower mentioned this is I-75, US 27 is the right-hand side. This is 35th Avenue, Segment B. This is 150 acres, and their main structure with additional outbuildings.
D is open a public hearing to consider approval of an amended and
the whole thing? Okay. Open a public hearing to consider approval of an amended and restated site and concurrency development agreement, Stolen Hours PUD, to be entered into pursuant to sections 163.3220 through 163.3243, Florida statutes, between the City of Ocala, Ocala 42nd Street Commercial LLC, Florida Limited Liability Company, Leon Ocala Holdings LLC, a Florida Limited Liability Company, case number DMA 13-0005. This is the first of two public hearings. The second and final public hearing is scheduled for April 2nd at 4 p.m. Presentation by Mr. Mundell.
This is the first hearing. No presentation.
Yeah.
Can I get a motion? No motion.
No, we're just opening.
Okay. Yeah, open it up for public comment, please.
Anyone in the audience care to discuss this issue? Second and final reading of ordinances, all are public hearings. General business. Adopt resolution 2013-37 to authorize the city to submit a request to the U.S. Department of Agriculture a rural business enterprise grant to fund Ocala Power Plant capital improvements. Astria.
Good afternoon, Astrida Tripovnik's Development Services. This resolution is a technical requirement of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and asks that by this resolution that the city manager is appointed as the authorized representative and that the city will not discriminate in the grant and be in pursuit of equal opportunity as we procure the construction services.
So moved.
Second.
Anyone in the audience care to address this? Call the roll.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Rowland?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye.
The city manager is distributing a final version of the Second Amendment to incubator lease. And if you will allow me to apologize to you and to the city manager for this late submission, the exhibits and some final issues were still being finalized as of Friday of last week, and I submitted a next to final version on Thursday along with the agenda item. But if you will allow me to just point you to page 9.
Astrida, let me read that, please. That's B.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Approve Second Amendment to lease with Ocala Marion County Chamber and Economic Partnership, CEP. Okay.
If you will allow me to point your attention to page 9, you will see it says Exhibit A, sketch depicting buildings, see attached. And then you'll flip to the next page and you'll see Exhibit A. The next is Exhibit B. The next is Exhibit C, all the way to Exhibit E. Again, that was not in your final agenda item that you received late last week, and I do apologize. Let me begin by saying that the primary purpose of the Second Amendment to the incubator lease is twofold. First, the CEP and the power plant have reached capacity, and they would like to expand their business incubator operations to include the former credit union, the half of the pump station building located just east of the original building, and the parking shed block that you are familiar with, located just south of the OUS, Ocala Utility Services Customer Service Building. In addition, it would also like to apply for a grant to renovate the existing building to provide additional leasable space, and then make some interior renovations to the credit union and the pump station building. And that grant that would fund those renovations requires a 10-year lease term. So two things are occurring with this lease amendment. We are asking you to allow the CEP and power plant to expand its operations to those buildings. We're also asking you to amend the lease to a 10-year term to allow for us to be competitive and qualify for this USDA grant that will fund those improvements needed to those expanded facilities. I would like to point out that the other amendments to the lease involve the CEP and power plant's request to have electric and sanitation services provided at no charge for 3 years from the date of the anniversary of this amendment. We are also being asked to provide for internet service to those expanded buildings and to the CEP. Some dark fiber will have to be laid as well. And those costs are outlined in the fiscal impact section of the agenda item. If the city or if the CEP elect to terminate the lease for the reasons that are outlined in this agreement, then a pro rata share of the grant, if it's awarded, would have to be paid back by the terminating party. So those are the primary provisions of the lease amendment. Do you have any questions?
Did I understand you correctly, the terminating party, whether it's the city of Ocala or the CEP, would be responsible for the pro rata share?
Perhaps I should be a bit more clear. In the event the city wishes to sell the building or buildings, then it is likely that the city of Ocala will have to pay the grant back. Mm-hmm. I believe Mr. Gooding used the terms may reimburse the grant in the provision. If the CEP finds that it is no longer, that those buildings are no longer suitable for their original purpose, then they would be required to pay the grant back. In addition, if they are in default, they would have to pay the grant back.
Okay.
She's right. The only way we would pay it back is if we sell all or portions of the real property and terminate the lease based on that.
Okay.
And presumably if we did that, we'd generate enough money to pay the grant back. Otherwise, if it's terminated for cause or because they aren't, we put in here that if the city council determines that the project is no longer serving a public purpose or that they're not operating in an efficient manner, y'all can terminate the lease. Under that scenario, they would have to pay the grant back. Or if they just, we give them the ability to walk, because they always they have that anyway, and under that circumstance, they have to pay it back.
Yes, if the lease is in default, say the CEP is in default on it, and they don't have the ability to make payment on it, God knows I've seen that happen a couple times. Would the city then have to?
Yes, if the Chamber of Commerce turns out to be insolvent or judgment proof, then the states, excuse me, the feds are going to look at the city.
Okay.
And so then we then have to pursue an insolvent chamber at that time.
And Mr. Shealy is here, and I believe Kevin Reed is here too to answer any questions you might have about the expansion.
Mr. Shealy, you want to discuss anything? But I, if they are full in a year's time, I think they're doing excellent.
We do too.
Thank you. Yeah, Kevin Shealy, Chamber and Economic Partnership. Again, we appreciate the partnership that we have with the city on the power plant. We look forward to being able to extend that partnership. To be able to allow more entrepreneurial access to the community. I think we have some pretty exciting plans for those facilities and what we'll be able to do to provide more support to our entrepreneurial community to create jobs and prosperity for our community. We look forward to working with you. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer that.
Nope.
As always, thank you.
I move approval, Madam President.
I'll second.
Do you want to say something else?
No, thank you very much.
Okay. Anyone else in the audience care to discuss this issue? Call roll.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. Rowland?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye. B is Second Amendment. Oh, did you do that?
Mm-hmm. C.
Okay. C is approved reappointment of Diane McDonald to the General Employee Pension Board of Trustees for a 3-year term ending February 22nd, 2016.
So moved.
Second.
Anyone in the audience care to discuss this issue? Call the roll.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. Rowland?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye. D is approved the appointment of 2 applicants to the Ocala Planning and Zoning Commission for a 3-year term ending March 1st, 2016. And we have our ballots to vote for.
Yes,
that.
Yes, ma'am. You have, I've okay. passed them out earlier. If you need another one, I have more.
I'll but, take 3 or 4 more.
Jay wants a couple more ballots.
Oh. 1 vote.
He didn't clarify that.
Early vote after.
But that's right.
All right, thank you. Council reappoints Mr. Robert Batsell Jr. and Mr. Nathan Gibbons. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next is consent agenda. Is there anything you all want pulled?
I don't have anything.
I was going to pull the chief because he's in a coat and tie, but no.
Well, I'm going to pull B.
Okay.
Can I get a motion on?
So moved.
Second.
On the balance of the consent agenda.
Anyone in the audience care to address the consent agenda? Call the roll.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. Rowland?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye. B is adopt resolution 2013-38 to allow for the consumption of alcohol, wine, and beer at the Recreation and Parks Administration Building. And Catherine, that's what I'd like to know, you know, the Discovery Center and the exit exterior pathway between the two buildings during the Culture Builds Evolved Play Art Show. and I can understand everything except the administration building. Why do we need alcohol there?
I believe it's for a juried art show.
For what?
A juried art show. Melissa Townsend is here, our arts coordinator. If Melissa, would you like to come up?
Good afternoon, Melissa Townsend, Recreation and Parks Department. This is the third of the art receptions for the Culture Builds Juried Art Competition Series. This one is titled Culture Builds Evolved Play, and it's taking place at the Rec and Parks Administration Building and Discovery Center. And we have had wine and beer at each of the receptions. The first one was at City Hall in November of 2012, and the second one just occurred on March 1st at the Citizen Services Center. It's in keeping with the flavor of a typical art reception.
So it's just for that?
Yes, it is. It's just for that one evening from 6 to 8 p.m.
Thank you.
And just a quick question. There will be art in both of those locations? And so
yes, there is.
So people will be going from place to place?
Correct. Okay. And we'll designate that walkway.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Did you make a motion? So moved.
Second.
Anyone in the audience care to discuss this? Call the roll.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. Rowland?
Aye.
Ms. Rich?
Aye. Introduction and first reading of ordinances, introduction of resolutions. Second and final reading will be April 2nd, 2013. A is introduced budget resolution 2013-122, correction to supplemental appropriation resolution.
I'll introduce.
I have nothing to read.
B, introduced budget resolution 2013-123, amending the FY 2013 budget to reappropriate funds for FY 2012 to FY 2013 to cover grants with agreements that extend beyond September 30th, 2012.
I'll introduce.
C is introduced budget resolution 2013, amending the FY 2013 budget to accept an appropriate anticipated funding from the YMCA in the amount of $11,500 for use of the Jeremy Gant Aquatic Center.
I'll introduce.
D, introduced budget resolution 2013-125, amending the FY 2013 budget to donate a portion of the designated police trust and agency fund by the MLK Youth Sponsorship.
I'll introduce.
10, Utility Report.
Good evening, Madam President. As Council's aware, Utility Services is actually composed of the two major utilities the city runs and our Customer Service and Billing Office. At the last Council meeting, we had our Director of Electric, Mike Poucher, present a brief update on the Electric Division. And tonight, with Council's indulgence, we're asking Daryl Muse to step forward and give a brief update on the water.
Good afternoon, Council. Daryl Muse, Water Resources Department. Due to Mike's extended presentation last week, I've been asked to be brief. This won't take long. There's been some conversation that some folks have had about the condition of some of our clay pipes within the city, and I wanted to give Council a brief overview. We have about 600,000 feet of clay gravity mains throughout the city. And over the past 4 years, we've had a project to televise these lines to try to ascertain the condition of them. We've completed the project to get all the lines televised, and we've slip lined, which basically is taking some PVC pipe and lining the interior of the pipe where you find cracks and other degradation in the pipe. And to date, we've done about 123,000 feet of that 600,000 feet of clay pipe. Now, mind you, not all of that pipe is bad. So we're going to the points or places that we see major issues and starting there. And we have about three more phases of that project to get all the roots and the other areas of the pipe that we've had problems in. So, conservation and lighting. If council recalls, about 8 months ago, we brought three water resources employees up to recognize them for implementing some automated strategies at WRF number 3. To date, we've saved about $8,000 in utility costs, electric costs, by implementing those strategies. We're continuing to roll that out to some of the other facilities. It's been so successful. We have an LED lighting project that was approved last week, last council meeting, scheduled to be installed at the water treatment plant, and we're doing some additional retrofits at the remaining facilities. So we anticipate we'll get some savings there. The Water Resources Group continues to respond to customer concerns within our service territory. This year, we've made about 7,000 feet. We've installed about 7,000 feet of potable water main, and that's as a result of people calling for service. We've put in about 2,000 feet of wastewater pipe. Also, in response to several bad wells that we've had in the northeast side of town, northeast 35th and 16th Avenue, to be specific, we installed about 3,500 feet of water main there, and that's resulted in about 53 new properties being connected to the city's water system. So the ROI on that's about 50 months, and we were able to respond quickly with some of our crews, and we were able to get those folks hooked back up with water. They've been having water issues in that area for some time. Back in the 60s, when a lot of those properties were developed, they used a pesticide to spray on the ground for termite control before they poured the slabs. And FDEP has found that those pesticides may be getting into the source wells there. So we felt that it was important to get those folks available, make available city water to them as soon as possible. We also, in that area, there was no fire service, no fire hydrant service. And while we were there, we installed six fire hydrants, and we properly identified them as serviced by the city of Ocala, since they are in close proximity to some of our competitors' water services. So. While we were there also, that is in the county. I stole your thing. That is in the county, and the road there was in pretty poor condition. It is a dirt road. Well, it was paved at one time, but now it's primarily dirt. And there were literally 2 foot deep potholes and places that had been washed out. And we had our equipment there, and we had material there, we had dirt there, and we got several requests from the citizens out there to do something while we were out there with their equipment. Our guys called in and asked us, could they spend a couple of hours, their time, after hours, just with the equipment before they brought it in, and we granted them permission to do so, and they were able to at least get those roads in a passable condition. I have another picture here, I can't find it right now, but the citizens out there literally put 4x4s across the road to stop traffic, and they had authorized neighbors to drive across their yards to get in and out of the property back there. So we felt it was the right thing to do, so we did it.
Now,
yes, ma'am.
Did we get permission from the county to work on their road?
We did not ask the county for permission. We got permission to put the pipes in and to return it to a state that was similar to before we got there. So.
Beg forgiveness later.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the role of the police department. You ask for forgiveness rather than permission.
Usually the county doesn't take. Usually the county takes the position that they're not obligated to maintain subdivision roads, or actually any roads for that matter, unless they've expressly undertaken that obligation. for which they have done so in very few circumstances. So had you asked them, I'm sure they would have said fine. They don't see it as their responsibility, much less their monopoly.
Yeah, we've done more rooms than that we've worked on for them.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine. One last thing, revenues, just speak a moment about that. Revenues have been consistent throughout the this reporting period. They remain flat. We did see a slight uptick this month in our revenues, and we anticipate that the upward trend will continue as we get into some of our higher demand months. If the summer's hot and the weather's dry, as the old Florida almanac prognosticates. So hopefully we'll be able to meet all those demands during the summer. So I'm here for any questions that you might have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Darrell. Just another couple of quick updates. The Crystal River 3 project talks continue. The report we got is that they remain cordial and productive. That's as much as we've been able to get so far from them. But that's a good sign since apparently everybody's talking. We did get word that one of the subcontractors to Elster, who provide us the meters and service for our automated meter reading, has indicated they're going to cease production of the meters. Mostly they provide our water meters. Elster has assured us that they have other resources from other contractors that are comparable and can continue to help us complete that project. So we don't anticipate any problems there at this time. CSO informs me that we are closing in on a go-live date for our new billing system. They are being hesitant to confirm it since we've had other challenges develop, which is not unusual in any large software system that you're trying to put in. But we look for a May date at this time to actually bring that system live and operational. We'll give council further updates as we close in on it. Other than that, I had the pleasure of accompanying our city manager to Washington for the legislative rally. I'm sure he'll provide more detail. I felt it seemed very productive in talking to some of the legislators about the concerns we have. I hope to continue that at the Tallahassee legislative rally early in April, and we'll report back to council on the subject matter we get there once we do it. Other than that, if there are any questions, thank you.
Thank you. The internal auditor's report, I don't, unless you have something to ask her, she gave us a handout of what she's done. Do you have any questions for Jean? Okay, thank you. City manager's report.
Thank you, Madam President. I have six items I want to just touch very briefly. The first is, we have, if you recall, established a date for the general employees pension discussion to continue for April 16th. I wanted to get some feedback from council members as to how you want that meeting structured. We've used two strategies in the past. One is to simply make it a line on a regular agenda, and once we completed the items on the agenda, go to that last item and spend whatever time was necessary. We've also had a special meeting that was established prior to the regular meeting. And so I want some feedback from council members as to how you want to structure the discussion for the general employees pension redesign on April 16th.
Didn't we request two or three different scenarios?
Yeah, they'll be presented that evening. I've talked with Jim Rizzo last night. He says they are on task to complete those assignments. So he'll present the two additional scenarios that were requested that night. And so tonight, the ask is, how do you want that meeting structured? Is it similar to the one we did in the past, where it's just another item on the agenda, or do you want to have a different meeting, a special meeting, where you discuss this item?
I'd like to keep it.
On the agenda?
On the agenda.
Okay.
And last, and bring our dinner?
Well, I mean, I'd like to see Rizzo Company hand us a report, okay, yes, and go over it line by line, and then limit any discussion to only the report and items within the reports, and not a philosophical discussion of what pensions are good for and what they're not good for. I think we've all determined that we're going to have a pension or some type of benefit plan, retirement plan, so.
Would you all be interested in making a decision that night? We need to,
yes.
we need to bring this to an end.
Yeah, I think we need to bring it to an end.
I mean, we meet, and it's just time to make a decision.
Yes, I agree.
So do you agree that we should make a decision that night?
I think we need to know when we leave that night. I'm sorry.
Huh?
I was just going to say, I think when we leave the night, that night, after the meeting, we need to know that we have a road we're going down and what that road is. You know, which one of those options we've picked. We're going to land on one of them.
Okay.
As far as like the deep, I mean, I guess there's going to be additional details that are going to have to be worked out beyond that meeting, but we have to know what road we're going down, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you're agreeing to the concept.
Right.
I was just going to say, on the, like the last meeting we did, I mean, if staff is best can possible, probably keep a light agenda. We just start at 4 with our normal meeting and let's get through everything.
And
then do that last and set a time for, because, I mean, I'm sure there'll be some employees at the end of the workday that may want to be a part of that. So if we do the normal course of business like we do, say, before, and just pick that, say, like at 6 o'clock, 5:30 or 6, and then do that last so it's we can get everything else done, because that could go on for a little bit, and just do it last on the 16th.
Yeah, I would agree, and I would agree with everyone else that we need to come to a decision that night.
Because most of us know what we want anyway, or almost what we want. Now the problem is going to be us coming to a decision.
I don't think we're
not that far off.
I don't think we're that far apart.
I mean,
all right, thank you. Jim Rizzo, Jim Lynn will be here that evening, and they will focus their comments on the, not only the three plans that are already outlined, but the two additional ones. And of course, they'll be able to be available to answer any questions or provide any feedback the council members so desire at that night.
Will we see their report prior to the meeting?
I hope so. I talked to them last night. They've had some delays in getting some information from Foster and Foster. We think we got that resolved. And so he believes he'll have it done at least a couple days in advance. He'll be able to see it.
Okay, great.
Number two is the power plant anniversary. I can't believe it's been a year already, coming up on the first anniversary for the power plant. We're having a special celebration this Thursday, March 21st, from 5 to 7 o'clock. There will be a ribbon cutting slated for 6 p.m. I wanted to make sure that all council members and staff are invited to this special event to acknowledge the first year anniversary. I've also been asked to see if there is a council member who would be interested in providing a couple comments just before, of course, the ribbon cutting, nothing more than maybe a minute or two acknowledging this wonderful event.
I'm having surgery Thursday, so I won't be there. And I would suggest the president pro tem make a few comments.
Okay.
If you can help go.
Sure.
With your permission, then I'll advance that on to Kevin Sheely and put you on the program. Mm-hmm. The third item I have is the fuel tax discussions with the county. I wanted to make sure I had reviewed some dates that we have coming up regarding discussions. The first date is April 4th at 1 p.m. This particular meeting will be a joint meeting with the city councils of the other four municipalities in Marion County. This will be located on the second floor of the CEP. If you recall, the councils from the other cities came forward and asked if they could have a meeting in which they could talk about the county's proposal to reduce the fuel tax allocations. So again, that is on April 4th, 1 p.m. at the CEP conference room on the second floor. Now, right behind that is the joint meeting with the Board of County Commissioners. This is on April 10th at 9 a.m. in the same building where we were at the previous time. Okay. Staff is continuing to focus some of our discussions and ideas, and we'll certainly present that to you before those meetings so you'll be well briefed and informed.
And the city county one is at 9 a.m., is that correct?
Yes.
What date is that again?
That is April 10th.
Yeah,
April 10th is, I need to verify what date that is. April 10th is a Wednesday.
And where is it going to be again?
The same place you were last time. Item number four is just simply wanted to report out from our trip to D.C. If you recall, there are four reasons why we went up there. As association with American Public Power, FMPA, FMEA was in force with all the representation moving forward in D.C. to talk about four items. One was tax-exempt financing. You may have seen in the president's budget, he is looking to eliminate tax-exempt financing. This is a big deal. Tax-exempt finance has been around since 1913, in fact, 100 years, and it's ostensibly used by cities to finance infrastructure. And we generally receive between 115 and 150 basis points savings by using tax-exempt financing. To give you an example of what this would mean to us if that financing would go away, if we had a $100 million bond that we were going to finance for a 30-year term, with today's interest rates, with tax-exempt financing, we would spend about $71 million in interest costs. Okay? Now, if Congress and the President's budget were to have their way, and the tax-exempt financing was eliminated, that same bond issuance, 30-year term, $100 million, would cost us $121 million in interest costs. It's huge. And the vast majority of infrastructure, three-quarters of it, is of course financed and done primarily through tax-exempt financing by school districts, by cities, by municipal power companies, and so it's a pretty big deal. Visited with a number of representatives. They all were saying the right things, including Senator Nielsen, who of course we had some doubts about his support for that, but they're all saying the right things. The second item is the Dodd-Frank Act. If you recall, this was passed back in 2010. This was an attempt to, if you will, regulate Wall Street. It was never intended to govern municipal utilities. However, the Commodities Future Trading Commission, CFTC, in writing the regulatory rules for the Dodd-Frank Act, has established what they call a special entity, i.e. cities and municipalities and power companies, that would have to comply with the Dodd-Frank Act. So this is significant because we were never intended to be caught in this net, but they have thrown a huge net out and they've got us caught in it. So any time we were to issue swaps or hedging for natural gas in excess of $25 million, we'd have to comply with the Dodd-Frank Act. Now remember, we spend about $700 million at FMPA for natural gas, so we're gonna get caught up in this and it would have significant cost impacts upon us. Not only that, but it reduced the number of counterparties that would want to do business with us because they don't want to have to go through all the rigmarole required by the Dodd-Frank Act. And so what we're advocating is that they move that threshold from $25 million up to $800 million to keep us out of that entanglement. And again, all the people we visited with were very positive for that. The third item was cybersecurity. As you can probably attest to in the news, there's a tremendous amount of cyber activity happening, a lot of attacks from China, other parts of the world on the U.S. system. And of course, our transmission systems are very vulnerable to this type of attack. Electric municipals, public power, are already regulated by NERC, the North American Energy Reliability Corporation, and FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. They already have $1 million fining authority over us. And we're advocating that whatever regulations come out, make sure they're given to NERC and FERC. What we're hearing is they want to put another layer of bureaucracy over us, Homeland Security, so we'd have to comply with their provisions as well as NERC and FERC's. And so again, another layer of government, more bureaucracy, more cost. And lastly was captive rail. There are only four main rail lines. And the cost of providing transportation for coal, which is a big part of our portfolio, is almost triple the transportation costs are almost triple the cost of coal itself because of the monopolistic behaviors of some of the rail lines. As we talked about that, we had a chance to meet with Senator Rubio's staff, Sarah Decker. We met with Ted Yoho. We met with Representative Gus Bilirakis, who heads the Energy Committee. We also spoke with Representative Daniel Webster, Representative Richard Nugent, and we had FaceTime with Senator Bill Nielsen. So we had a lot of face time with a lot of our elected officials. Again, I can report out too that they were saying the right thing, speaking from the right script. Understand though, they are just but a handful of senators. They're just a handful of the 435 congressmen and representatives. So we'll keep pushing this and hopefully get some moving our way. Down the home stretch, we'll have in town Friday the three finalists for the chief financial officer. Three finalists, two are from Florida, one is from California. It will be an all-day event. They'll all three be here at the same time. The day will begin at 9 o'clock with meetings with cabinet. It will continue with the external auditor. The budget and finance team also have a chance to interview the candidates. We're going to have lunch at Le Cuisine with all three candidates. The council president has been invited to attend that. We'll be providing tours of the city afterwards. And then, of course, we'll have a chance to meet and vet the three candidates and hopefully come up with a decision on that. So that will take place this Friday. If you have any questions on that, please let me know. And finally, I've asked our interim CFO to go ahead and give us a report on the budget calendar. We have one critical date this Friday with submission of budgets. I want to take this opportunity to give council an update.
Thank you. Yes, as Matt indicated, we actually have our budget submittals due this Friday on the 22nd from the city departments. So staff will be reviewing those over the next couple weeks, and then we will have departmental meetings with each of the departments over the next few weeks in preparation for our workshops that will be coming up in June with council. Council's first workshop starts early June 11th. You will be seeing us advance forward those dates so that they can all get calendared for the summer. And we expect, as in years past, that we will have a workshop about every 2 weeks throughout the summer. And we will break it up again in the different pieces, you know, as we go through the budget process. The budget instructions, council was copied on those when they were originally sent out, just to recap some of the directions that were given to staff. We are looking for no increase in ad valorem. We expect revenues to remain flat for fiscal 14. We are looking to balance revenues to expenditures without the use of fund balance. We are looking to offload expenditures, you know, and really scrutinize the budgets to make sure that we're paying for, you know, what we need to in the proper places and utilizing all of our different sources. We are not anticipating citywide salary increases at the present time. We are looking for no new positions or replacement of positions that are lost through attrition or retirements. We're doing staff equivalent assessments. Basically, each area is looking through their staffing to determine is there the ability to fill with part-time assistance, temporary assistance, is there an ability to modify positions. So we're going through that exercise as well. We are developing contingency plans for some of the different departments for some cost increases that we just expect that are happening through gas and some other things. And we are doing some forecasting. Each of the departments are turning in a 3-year operating forecast for their department in both revenues and expenditures. So we will be very busy over the next couple months.
Any questions for Cindy?
Ken has a question for you. Are you through?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, just a couple of questions. Where are we on that $500 million swap? I know that we were trying to make some progress on that. Could you give us a little update on where
absolutely
we are that resolved?
In fact, we're meeting this Thursday in Orlando. FMPA staff met about 30 days ago and said they'd be having a follow-up meeting this Thursday to review the three alternatives that we've got on the table. One of the alternatives is to delay any action until what they call a LIBOR indice perhaps rebounds so that maybe we can get out of the swaps with no net cost. The challenge with that is the federal government right now has what they call a qualitative easing 3 program where they're pumping $85 billion into the stock market on a monthly basis, and that's keeping that LIBOR indice down. So as long as they're doing that, we don't have any real hopes of seeing a rebound. The second thing is simply perhaps taking the swaps, terminating them, and financing the termination costs, which right now is about $110 million. Or the third option is to look at renegotiating with our counterparties the first years of the terminations, and so we just financed the first years, hoping that that LIBOR will rebound, and then we can get out of the remainder years.
Okay, all right. And just a comment, I know you're interviewing the CFOs. Well, I want to save that comment until my comments, so never mind.
Okay. You say you're done?
I am done.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor?
Police report. I don't have anything on the police issue, but I will I'll talk when I have comments by mayor.
City attorney's report. And we have informational items. We're having a work session on next Tuesday at 11:30, the audit committee meeting, stormwater master plan in the council chambers. Number two, we'll have a joint city-county work session Wednesday, April 10th, 9 a.m. about the fuel taxes at the Marion County Extension Services. Comments by Mayor.
Yes, ma'am. There was an item that I was working on some time ago. We were trying to, if you remember, you're trying to get some of those little white lights, you know, in the downtown area, you know, during the year. Mm-hmm. And we kind of had some false starts. We'd find someone that was interested in doing it, and then they would, you know, not follow through. And so I'm still struggling with that. So I just wanted to let you know, you know, springtime's coming, everything. And I want to see if we can work on that and, you know, get some people that can actually do it this time, you know, to come visit us, because up until this point, you know, we haven't been able to do it. I know the council wanted us to kind of take a picture of, or an idea of what it would look like, you know, before we made any decisions. So I'm going to try to get someone back to do that for us. The homeless facility that we've been working on at the old Project Hope property, we're still moving forward on. Got Catholic Charities is involved in our steering committee, Carla Grimsey at Interfaith, Father Pat, and so we're, you know, making steady progress, but trying to figure out what services we want to provide, what the cost of that would be, and once we determine what that is, we're trying to come up with a plan to find out what that dollar amount is, and then, you know, let people know what it is. And I know there's been a lot of people around the community that have been involved or wanting to get involved in that from a financial standpoint. So hopefully we'll have that done here shortly. How many of you knew that Marion County Day was last Tuesday?
One in Tallahassee.
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't.
Anybody? No. I mean, that's something we've had for, what, 35 years, where we've gone up with the county and other people to have Marion County Day. Senator Huckel called me and said, you coming to Marion County Day? I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. When is it? She said, it's Tuesday. She called me on Saturday. And I said, no, I had no idea. So we need to have a better communication with the county about when events are like that, that we should be involved in. And so I don't know, you know, what happened, but, you know, next year, let's, you know, be there for that. And then the CFO position, you know, I've sat here for 12 years and seen people come, seen people go. We've hired city managers from in-house and different positions in-house, et cetera, or we've done national searches and you know, come up with candidates for different positions. You know, we've got a person who's filling that position right now, Cindy Kelly, who's sitting there. I really don't see why you want to advertise for that position and have these candidates come in for that. She's qualified. She's probably overqualified for the position. She's done a good job. She's been here with us for, you know, quite some time. I just don't see the need personally. I don't have a vote in it, obviously, but you know, I've seen us do these things in the past. I think Cindy does a great job, and I can't think of any better person to fill that position than her. So
Thank you for the input.
Well, people already coming for Friday, so.
Well, I mean, that's true. I'm just saying, you know, she should be one of the people that are interviewed for the position.
She was interviewed.
Okay.
Just so you know. I looked internally first. Both Cindy and Mary Ann came forward and said we're interested. I did interview both of them. I decided to go outside. Cindy came back and said, can I compete? And I said, absolutely. That'd be a great idea. So she put her name back in the hat. And so both expressed desire to compete. Both were given the chance. Ultimately, I'm accountable for the position, and sure. I got to do what's best for the city's interest.
Okay. So she's involved in the goings on with this?
This Friday, no. No, the two candidates are outside. The three candidates are outside candidates.
But when you interviewed them, have they been here before? Or this Friday is the first time?
First time.
Yeah. So no, she's not being interviewed for the position.
She's not one of the finalists.
Okay.
That's all I've got, Madam President.
Thank you. Comments by council members? Mr. Musley.
I don't have any additional comments tonight.
I'm going to come up with some comments, too.
I'll have to start writing a list down.
Yes, hi.
Strangely, I have nothing.
You're a kid.
You criticize me when I haven't any comments.
I always have.
I don't have anything.
But I do want to say, you know, last council meeting, we were talking about, you know, somebody made a comment about the Republican from Kentucky, and I just wanted to tell y'all that between last week and this week, the Republican from Kentucky staged a filibuster. So y'all better watch out. I'm looking through the council rules for about filibusters to see if I can get.
By the way, it was the ninth longest filibuster of all time.
That's right. So you got to watch for the Republican from Kentucky. You never know what works.
How long did he filibuster?
I have no idea.
Mr. Owen.
No, ma'am.
Mr. McLeod.
Just briefly again, thank you to the mayor for the fine job he did on getting the governor down here. And also, you know, when I spoke with Matt, I knew that Cindy had been involved in the process and, you know, from the beginning early on. And, you know, although she's not in the final three and I think very highly of her, I do support your right to make that choice. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I wasn't saying anything about your responsibility or anything for the choice. I just think you're making the wrong choice.
Thank you.
I think she's
somewhere Rodney Smith's out there and saying, where was that hell-butt speech last year?
I think they spent about three plus hours on that one.
Greg said that.
Chief, do you know where we can get a refund on David Allen Code tickets tonight?
I also told Matt that I thought Cindy should be considered because I believe in promoting people within.
Absolutely.
Giving them a chance first before we go to California to get somebody, you know.
Right.
But y'all also agree that the charter says that the city manager hires everybody? Okay.
Well, not everybody.
I mean, we only hire him, and then he takes care of everybody else.
Didn't you go over the charter? Can't we change that?
We can change whatever we want to change.
I don't think we want to change that.
I'm not big on changing charters.
I don't want to change that.
You don't want to.
But we can have a vote.
Anyway, I can read, but I'm having eye problems, so that's why I've been blundering all evening. Hopefully in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I'll be able to see real good. And I won't do that. And with that, if there are no more comments, we are adjourned.
Well, hope your eyes get better. Is it painful or is it just you can't focus?
I can't.
Except brown substance in that bottle right there is what's causing that.